The sight of fans cheering on the Royals on the road was a hugely welcome one as the 2021-2022 campaign got underway for Reading FC. And despite an entertaining affair, we were greeted with the very unwelcome sight of fans on social media laying into the club and each other at full time. Welcome to the Tireless Den podcast, episode 267. I'm your host, Mark Mayo. Joining me to discuss or work our way through the wreckage, as some fans might want to put it, of the 3-2 defeat to Stoke is Simeon Pickup, the editor of the Tireless Den. How are you, mate?
I'm good, thanks. Great to be back on the road on Saturday and looking forward to getting some more match days in the system over the next over the coming season. And yeah, just delighted to be back into a bit of normality, really, because obviously it's something that we've been missing for far too long now.
Yes, and three home games in a row now as well, which is very much a luxury that hopefully we'll be enjoying and talking about a bit later on. Before we go into the recap for the Stoke game, as ever, big thanks to our Patreon subscribers and our sponsors, ZCZ Films. And also just a note as well, that we have a little bit of a campaign coming out later in the week for the Preston game, the league game on Saturday. Minutes applause, basically, this will be, which we'll kind of detail a bit further down the line. But keep your eyes out on the Tireless Den blog. And I think the club are going to be joining us in pushing that as well. So hopefully a really good moment in the works there. But in the meantime, let's talk about the Stoke game and jump into the recap.
Come rain or shine, it's time to relive the latest match action with the recap.
This podcast is sponsored by ZCZ Films, Reading's oldest ultras.
So let's start with the starting 11 and the, well, more specifically, the subs and the squad, because this, as soon as it was released, churned out a lot of conversation and a lot of interest as to what was going on with Reading. And I suppose if you want something that perhaps underlines just the state of the club at the moment, in a kind of good and a bad way, I guess, is that that first 11 that came out, pretty obviously very similar to last year, a pretty strong Championship 11 with a couple of young players in there that maybe you can argue over whether they're ready or not, and we'll talk about their performances in just a second. And the five substitutes as well, only three of whom you could really say are full-fledged first-team senior players. So what did you make when you saw the team sheet come out then?
Not too disheartened, to be honest. I think there was a huge amount more we could have done. I guess with a bit more preparation, I would have preferred something like a 3-5-2, given that we've got the players to do that. Bristow maybe as a wing-back rather than a winger. McIntyre as a left-sided centre-half rather than left-back. But given that there wasn't a huge amount of time after we heard that Ovie Ajayi was unavailable going into this one, it's a difficult one. Do you switch formation completely to fit in all of your best players? Do you go for a formation that's more tried and tested and kind of try and fit players in into that system? There wasn't a particularly obvious answer, but all things considered, it wasn't a disastrous selection by any means. And given that we do have, say, McIntyre, who can fill in at left back if we needed to, Aziz, who's come in on the right in Mate's absence, it could be an awful lot worse, to be honest, than having those players with that versatility. And we're probably going to have to rely on that a lot more this season.
Yeah, to be honest, when I first saw the team sheet, I was kind of the mind that McIntyre would be filling in the centre mid and Bristow at left back and kind of, you know, get Swift and Aziz as floating kind of attacking midfielders wherever they can. But I can see the logic in what Paunovic did. If you watch the highlights for the goals and certainly the final goal, McIntyre as a left back, he's obviously not naturally a left back. He just happens to be a left-footed centre back is really what's going on here. The performance of Bristow and Aziz then, what did you think of the pair of the young kids in the lineup?
More impressed with Aziz, to be honest, particularly with his running in behind. You could tell he had that kind of that eye to look for the ball in behind and to make those kind of runs. And mentioned Mate a minute ago, we need that kind of that instinct to try and look for space in behind a defence. And when you've got someone like Swift, you can play those passes over the top. Having someone making those runs in behind really does give us an extra element. Wasn't at its sharpest at the weekend. There's a lot more improvement to come there, but it is encouraging that we have someone like that. Bristow looked a bit raw. He looked a little bit unsure on the left, I think, and not quite on top of things defensively. But it's hard to criticise him too much, considering that he's a very inexperienced left back being played as a winger in a tough game like that. Look, he'll learn from the experience. I don't want to kind of overanalyze what he has done and hasn't done. I'd like to see him match to get experience as a left back. Not too much to be said about him as a left winger.
Yeah, I think it's also important to remember if he had a really experienced left back in behind him who could tell him where to go and all that sort of stuff, that I think that's that would be a really useful thing. But we've got a young centre back at left back who, you know, McIntyre obviously has enough on his plate. With all due respect to him, he's a good player, but he's not a sort of leader, as it were, yet, and he's not going to be able to necessarily bring Bristow through the game as well as himself. So that's just, you know, that's just how it is at the moment. But the couple other points as well to talk about before we get onto the good bits. The set pieces, bit of a vulnerability there. Stoke almost scoring early on before they did score. Also, Lucas Schau, really, how would you describe this? Because the stats say one shot, 11 passes, 16 touches, and he won none of his four duels, none of his two aerial duels. Was this because of, you know, the players playing around him? Was he just a bit not quite up to speed yet? What was wrong with Lucas Schau this weekend?
I think I've seen today that he might have had a dislocated shoulder, at least going by what Jonathan Lowe said today. How much that affected his game or not, I'm not overly sure. To be honest, he does have those performances in him where he doesn't really put himself about that much. So yes, he may well have had something wrong with him in terms of an injury. But even then, I mean, look, he still needs to kind of put himself about a bit more and have a bit more of a presence. And if it's really that bad, then get him off the pitch a bit earlier and get Puskas on. But there we go. We do need to get him back up to fitness as soon as we can, because if he is going to be playing at 50% or anything like that, then we are going to be in big trouble, because we do need his goals this season.
Yeah, 77 minutes that Puskas was introduced for Joe off the bench and for Paunovic. That's like doing it in the first half, to be honest. That's a big statement to take off what is usually his pride and joy striker, isn't it? And Puskas coming on, was it really looking more towards, as we were going into that last 15 minutes, was it more Stoke or more Reading?
I think the momentum just seemed to go away from Reading, to be honest, as particularly when that goal went in, the Stoke winner, that is. And at that point, you're wanting Reading to really kind of go again and get a bit of momentum back and really try and build themselves up to get another equaliser. But when you don't have the attacking substitutes available to make, and you're basically bringing Tom Holmes on as a kind of a striker or a right winger, the quality isn't there. And I think when you've gone behind a few times before, just kind of getting that sucker punch at the end, it would have been a tall order for Reading to really kind of drag themselves back into the game. And yes, they got the away end cheering them on, and the away end were terrific for an awful lot of that game, to be fair. Even in those circumstances, it would have been a big ask to get it back to 3-3.
Yeah, definitely. I think that's the thing. And I suppose on the positives, Reading scored two good goals. John Swift's finish was really good. A bit of an interesting decision to go with the right foot. It's kind of exposed his vulnerability, but then you see his strength with the right foot and getting to hook that ball back in. It was you can say it's a bit of a lucky bounce to create that goal, but then Stoke benefited from two deflections. Certainly for the winner, the defending left a lot to be desired, but that is the fact of the matter, that if Reading had the deflection bounce a little bit differently on occasions, then it's a very different game. And really, you know, I think how much of a disaster is this to be? One of the reasons why I'm kind of letting Sim answer most of the opinion things here is because for personal reasons, I didn't go to the game. So when I finally was able to check up on what had gone on, I was very surprised to see that this almost apocalyptic feeling of fans demanding answers and things like this. And from the sort of naive point of view, as someone who didn't follow the game minute by minute, it did surprise me a little bit that this reaction came about.
Yeah, I'm too, to be honest. Look, if you'd gone into the game beforehand and said Reading are going to lose this 3-2, kind of fighting back a couple of times but ultimately not having enough, of course you would have been disappointed, but you wouldn't have thought that's the end of the world. And the reaction coming out of it, I think I think it's mainly born out of frustration with wider issues at the club, with things like the lack of signings and how small the squad is and all of this. It seemed to be more that was Reading losing this game in this fashion was essentially the outlet for that. And if you analyse the game on its merits over the course of the 90 minutes, Reading weren't that bad. I mean, if Reading had held on for 2-2, you would have thought that would have been a fair value for Reading's performance over the course of the game. If Reading had snuck it 3-2, you wouldn't have thought it was particularly unfair. Games like this do happen, and given that Stoke were playing in front of a boisterous home crowd roaring them on after for the first time in ages, given they're a pretty experienced side, they've made signings. Look, losing that game 3-2 really isn't the end of the world, and there are positives to be had there. The way that Reading fought back and got it back to 2-2, good individual performance from Swift, for example, is far from the end of the world. I've seen much worse performances than that and not been particularly worried by them. And if that is the standard that Reading are generally set over the course of the season, we're not going to be in trouble of relegation. My worry is more, how do we react to this game? Do we see this as the doom-tiding apocalyptic game that kind of pushes us towards the bottom three and shows that we are going to be going to the bottom three? Or do we just brush it off and say, you know what, decent performance, go again on Saturday against Preston and get the 3 points? That's what it comes down to, really. But on the basis of this game and the merits of that game, don't be too worried.
Yeah, I suppose it's one of the things that we're doing this podcast on Monday. Ideally, would have been doing it a bit earlier, but it does actually, the Tarlas then mantra of being able to sleep on it a little bit and take a bit more of a step back before analysing the game, I think does make us push, certainly pushes us towards that feeling. Just generally speaking, I mean, what did we know at 5:15 on Saturday that we didn't know at 1:15? And I think we knew all of the things that we knew after the game previously. It's the, you know, the size of the squad. We had a bit of injuries, obviously. You mentioned Obi Ajaria last minute being ruled out. We knew that a couple of kids were going to have to be involved in some way or shape or form. And we actually, I think people like that. So that doesn't seem to be like a bad thing. And there's a lot of talk. I know Star are kind of bringing out a sense of trying to get the fans involved in dialogue with the owners, which is good. Obviously, that's always a good thing to happen. But personally, when people say, oh, the silence from the owners, I don't think there is a pathway for the owners to really help what people think, because ultimately it's a money issue. It's a regulation issue. The owners aren't going to come out and deliver their 8-point plan for everything to be perfect by 2027, because no club does that. The owners also aren't necessarily, it's not in their benefit to come out and say how awful things are, because then everyone who's asking for contracts, everyone who's dealing with the club from outside of the club can try and take advantage of that or something. So I think it is difficult. What Paunovic has said basically is that it's not great because we're not having the EFL help us, which is probably a fair point. What a lot of people, it's more kind of media sources have been tweeting out over the last couple of days, is that Reading aren't as bad as it maybe sounds, and that they are able to do some business, but they're kind of maybe being more picky and everything like that, which we spoke about this on the pod on the season preview. And again, there's merits to being a bit more picky and not signing every free agent you can just to find a squad of 25 players. And the fact that there are 5 subs on the bench, there's kind of word that maybe that was to do with the established player rule. And Paunovic says that he's not going to put the kit man on the bench, which is a little bit harsh. And the under-23s also had a game on Friday. So what's the point in an under-23 who's knackered being on the bench? So there are lots of factors. And maybe, Sim, because of social media and everything like that, maybe we do kind of end up overemphasising the people who are coming out with really bad opinions and saying, or not terrible opinions, but opinions that everything is bad. And maybe we do kind of allow ourselves to feel like that is more of the opinion of the overall fans than it actually really is.
Yeah, I think you get one opinion that comes out, or rather one kind of strand of opinion, and then you get people reacting that opinion, kind of dissecting that opinion and giving their take on it. And to be honest, the feeling that I got was just an awful lot of this was like perfectly reasonable things to be coming out with after the game, perfectly reasonable points about discussions with the club and kind of getting that dialogue going with the owners. But a lot of it came out of frustration that we just lost a game. If we had held on for 2-2, if we got it back to 3-3, God knows if we won it 3-2, people wouldn't be talking about this. And that's perfectly understandable. I mean, fans are very emotional after games. That's no bad thing. That's nothing unreasonable. But that does massively affect the dialogue on you have on social media after a match. And I do think we just need to kind of keep it a little bit in context and just realise that the whole situation can change a lot. I mean, look, if we sign Kadeem Harris before the Swansea game, or if we beat Swansea and then we sign a couple of players later in the week, people are going to be less worried. It's not that the overall issue is going to be really different. It's not that this is all going to suddenly change our feelings of the owners, but the nature of the discussion that we do have on social media is massively affected by that.
Just to pop in here really quickly, really helpfully from our point of view, as soon as we finished recording this podcast, the club did release a statement about what is going on at the moment. Just to summarise it for you, it doesn't actually give any more information, as it were, in the sense of what's going on. It just says that progress is being made in terms of the financial situation with the EFL. They're very disappointed with how the EFL have handled it, which I think is a fair point. They've also said that the owner, Dai Yong, remains committed to the club, which is good to know. And generally speaking, the statement is kind of as you one would expect, in that it tries to push forward a sense of clarity and transparency and updating the fans. Doesn't actually provide a huge amount of information, but yeah, as I'm sure we've spoken about, and as I'm sure you've just heard, we're not too surprised about that. And it actually says that the more information and the more rumour that there has been about the club and all sorts of stuff recently, it says that some of these rumours being inaccurate says actually quite weakens the club in its position, which I think is probably a fair point to make. So yeah, just throwing that in into the podcast just as I'm editing it, because this statement has come out from the club just confirming really that there's an embargo situation that's having to be dealt with. There's a sense of progress, but generally speaking, they can't really tell us any more detail about that, because it's you know, confidential behind closed doors stuff that needs to be sorted out by the club before anything can happen.
Well, let's hear from Veljko Paunović then, and what he thought after the game. He gives quite a bit of a longer take this time, the good and the bad points of all. So we'll hear him out, and then we'll jump into the mailbag and hear, as just as we've talked about, whether people's opinions on social media is really that important. Let's hear from what people have sent us on social media.
Yeah, the result never, when you lose, is good, and you never feel good about it. So I think, as you said a couple of times, we were able to come back, and after the first goal, even very quickly. And we were happy in that moment that we could still control the game and impose ourselves over our opponent, who today did pretty good job in their attack. But I also think that we could have done better. We could have exposed much more their weaknesses. There were, in our opinion, there were many. But at this point of the season, which is the first game, there is a long way to go. And we now just saw today again, when you start to compete after very erratic preseason, it's still very raw, and it's not we weren't ready for 90 minutes. That's how we conceded the third goal. I think we start to drop, and to a certain extent we were comfortable with 2-2 result, which is it's fine to manage it, but you have to look always to be solid at the back and effective in attack, play on their half and make them make mistakes and bad decisions. So, but unfortunately, we conceded a goal, and they capitalized on their depth and their quality in the final third. So this is something that definitely we have to look at, how that winner happened, because I think we could have avoided it. On the other side, a lot of positives, a lot of young players playing for the first time in front of the crowd, and they didn't crumble. They showed personality and good character. Competitive also, they've been competitive, Femi and Ethan Bristow. To be honest, this was my first time playing in front of our fans away in an away game, and I was impressed. I think we lost on the field, but our fans win their battle on the stands, and very proud of them.
For all the latest Reading news, analysis and opinion, visit the website at thetilehurstend.com.
Okay, then. Sam Richards kicks off. If you want to send in questions to the Tireless End podcast, we have the Facebook and the Twitter and the Gmail, thetirelessend@gmail.com. Always very happy for people to send in. As I just said, obviously, you know, there's a lot of opinions been floating around. We're happy to have any opinion sent in, and we'll give our take on it because, you know, I think the mailbag actually is, you know, as Sim was saying, is sent out a little bit after the emotional sort of sense post-result or immediately post-result. So what people send in is, I think, personally, if I'm allowed to say, this is a decent smorgasbord of opinion for what the fans are thinking. And Sam Richards has done that. He says, genuine question, is it really as bad as it seems? Or is it just a lot of fans throwing the toys out of the pram because of no signing so far? We still have 5 or 6 top championship players in the side. If the situation was that bad, wouldn't more of those players be gone? And to be fair, Sim, if, you know, we've said about how good John Swift is. We've sung the praises over the recent few months of Josh Lowen, Andy Winwater. These players aren't, they're not players that have handed in transfer requests. They're not players who are, you know, trying to get, they're not constantly linked with clubs as if their agents are trying to get them on the move and everything. Things, in certainly in terms of, as Sam says, these players leaving the club, it's actually really quiet.
Yeah, you would have thought there'd be more transfer rumours, even just kind of idle gossip coming from unreliable sources about, I don't know, Premier League clubs circle a couple of Reading players, clubs trying to pick the bones of Reading and trying to get all their best players on a on cheap deals and all the rest of it. You would have thought there'd be more of that. I guess it says something about the harmony that there is at this club that has been built up, obviously, regardless of things off the pitch, regardless of disappointment last season. There is a lot more harmony at this club. It feels a lot more unified under Paunovic, and we do seem to have that kind of more focused core, essentially, at the club. It says something about that. I guess also a bit about the lack of information we have about how all of this is going to turn out. Because, look, there's a very realistic scenario at this point that Reading end the transfer window with nothing amazing, but maybe say 3, 4, 5 signings solid that just change the picture a little bit, maybe even get us into playoff contention. And if that does happen, it would have been a bit silly for a player to say agitate away for remove or anything like that, as if everything is really bad and we're kind of destined for the bottom three.
Yeah, no, I think that's the thing, isn't it? It is about seeing out the rest of the window, partly. I think also, you know, you're saying that it says a lot about the harmony. I think it also says a lot about what the rest of the Championship and Premier League are going through at the moment. It is a, you know, it's not a great economic time. Clubs who have finally getting people in through the door, that will obviously boost their income, but it's not like they've suddenly become millionaires overnight from one game. That's not how it works. So I think it just shows that football is in a very difficult time at the moment, no matter what you can, you know, just because certain clubs at the very, very top are able to make massive signings still doesn't, there's scratch beneath that 0.1% and you get 99.9% of football teams that are in really difficult positions, and Reading are one of them. And yet a lot of that is self-inflicted over the last 10 years or so, as we've spoken about endlessly on this podcast, but some of it isn't. James Quinn saying, do you think there's been a slight overreaction after Stoke result? I personally think so. I was at the game and thought we actually played quite well. If Puskas tucks away that goal, I don't think anyone is complaining. Yes, the financial side is bad, but the players we have are more than capable. If, and there were some promising signs. He says, I've never thought it was a free kick for their goal, and it was sloppy to concede after scoring, but that's just Reading for you. I definitely think there's been an overreaction after the game, and we're not that bad. Also, Stoke were a good side, signed some tidy players. Ben Wilmot was good, and it's different if we had lost 4-0 at home to Peterborough, which, funnily enough, Sim, on the weekend, we're playing a team that has just lost 4-1 at home to a newly promoted team in Preston. And yeah, I think if we do have the next week, and as you said, whether that, whether the Stoke result is actually where we're at or whether it was like the peak of our season, we'll find out a little bit more in the next couple of days because, or the next couple of weeks, because if we win our two out of three for the next home games, I think we're looking quite good. And would you say, you know, as James says, that there were actually some relatively promising signs from this performance?
Yeah, absolutely. When you look at individual performances, so like Swift being actually really good for the time that he was on the pitch, getting that goal and that assist. Liam Moore, really good header. Femi Aziz, as I said earlier, some promising signs. generally the psychology of the team as well to come back from 2-1 down to get it to 2-2. Look, as James says, it's hardly as if we lost 4-0 to Peterborough. There's a very different kind of outcome for this game at Stoke. Maybe they, say, scored first and then really kicked on from that and went up 4-0 or 5-0 or anything like that. It's very, very different to getting a 3-2 winner late on. It's really not all that bad. And look, it's understandable that people kind of overanalyze and overreact to an opening day defeat. At the end of the day, look, it's the first game that we've had in club football for quite a while now. Of course, people are going to do that, and it's understandable. But just take it into context and just look, it's a long season, and we are going to have much worse games than this. There's every chance that we do lose 4-0 at home to Peterborough at some point, or something even worse than that in the season. And things are going to get worse. Let's just keep it in context and hopefully have some good times to enjoy. But look, that it can get an awful lot worse than this.
Yeah, Jolie actually tweeting us saying, will the suffering ever end? Which I think we're about to find out, I think. The suffering could end in the next couple of days, or it might get even worse. That's the beauty of football in Reading. You know, I think there's good reasons to believe both, basically. Alistair, final question from the mailbag. With the report yesterday suggesting that the reason the Football League aren't letting us sign players is because they're only allowing us to do it on one-year deals, and we want to sign people on two or multiple-year deals. So at what point do we just sign people up to get the bodies in? Personally, it doesn't make much sense to sign players on one-year deal because that only increases financial problems by probably having them letting them go on a free at the end of the season. Also, players will probably not want to sign a one-year deal. Now, this is unconfirmed from the club. Obviously, we don't know exactly what's going on. Those reports, and it's a reasonable assumption to take that maybe that's why certain players haven't signed. I say that because Kyle Edwards, who was on trial at Reading, has today signed for Ipswich. First point on that is Ipswich are in League One. It's not like he's gone to a really, really good club. Second point is he signed a 3-year deal. Now, we spoke about this last week. I personally don't see why we would sign up a player who obviously is at Championship level if he's just signed for Ipswich, or we can reasonably assume he's not Championship level. But a 3-year deal for him would have been madness for what we're at now. We've spoken so much about how we haven't got any money and all this. We've signed average players on long contracts. Doing that would obviously have been a bad decision. Yeah, if we could have got Kyle Edwards on a 1-year deal or 1 year with an extension, I disagree with Alistair. I think the 1-year deals were a perfectly reasonable thing to do at the moment because we don't have the money to sign them for 4 or 5 years. And you know, it's on a case-by-case basis. If a player is really, really good, you want them down for more. But I don't think there are many really, really good players at the moment. What? Where are you on this? Do you think that we should just do the one-year deals and get who we can in? Or do you think that maybe we should be a bit more picky, maybe?
I think just taking a step back a minute and kind of looking at the broader situation, there's a really weird kind of market dynamic at the minute with free agents and with clubs, because look, this is an opportunity for clubs to get their wage bills down, to kind of have a bit more pickiness when it comes to signing players. And I think we are going to see free agents maybe finding it a little bit more difficult to get as much money as they might have done in recent years, getting as longer deals as they might have done. Look, Kyle Edwards probably would have got a 3-year deal at a Championship club before. He's had to drop down to League One to get it. I think we are going to see kind of different things play out. Kadeem Harris as well is another good point. He probably would have got a 2 or 3 year deal relatively easily in the Championship not all that long ago. The whole situation is going to change a lot. That's not just true for Reading. It's true for other clubs as well. As for Reading, it does put us in a difficult position, though. If you do want players to come in who aren't kind of 37 years old, or they've just come out of non-league or something, the players that you're going to try and get are ones that are going to get interest from other clubs as well. And stability in a player's career is something that you should be able to offer to give them, well, a better package at your club. And if you're, say, mid to late 20s and you want to settle down somewhere, you want to really kick on in your career and improve, you do want that stability. And if you can't get that at Reading, you may very well end up looking elsewhere. I guess if we get to the end of the window and we're kind of looking at having to get players in, obviously it's a little bit different with free agents because you can go on a little bit further outside the transfer window. We may have to kind of change our approach, but I guess if what all of this boils down to is, are Reading being really picky to try and get really good signings to hopefully maximise our chances over the course of the season? That's one thing. But it's certainly an awful lot better than kind of Reading aren't able to sign anyone at all. So let's assess all this at the end of the window.
Yeah, you're absolutely right about free agents, and they have to make a decision. Does Kadeem Harris want to earn, you know, $5,000 a week at Reading for a year, or does he maybe want to wait and see a League One club can give him $3,000 a week for 2 years? It's still, you know, with the chance of leaving it in the middle of that, it's difficult. I'd actually just Googled Reading sign a player on a 1 year deal, and the only players that I can find that Reading have recently or semi-recently signed on a 1 year deal, let me know if you can think of any more, Sim, but Charlie Adam popping up, John O'Shea, Brynjar Gunnarsson, we signed to a final 1 year deal before he left. It's not a very common thing for a championship club to only do 1 year deals, but that's the strangeness of where we're at.
Yeah, and I can't think of any others apart from Charlie Adam, as you mentioned, and those other ones. And look, if you are getting players on 1 year deals, they're probably not all that good. And it's one thing adding in someone with a bit of experience for a limited time. To kind of come in and give a little bit of know-how to what is already a pretty big squad. I mean, you look at, say, John O'Shea coming in. There were plenty of other players in the squad at the time. Same with Charlie Adam coming in, kind of under Jose Gomez. It's not like we were building a squad around those players. And it's a very different time to be kind of looking at building a squad in contrast to when we made those deals.
Yeah, just some absolutely pointless, useless maths to round off this discussion. If Reading want to sign a player on a one-year deal and pay them $5,000 a week, that's about $260,000 that player is going to earn over the course of the year. For Reading to make back $260,000, they have to sell out the Eamon Dolan stand about 4 times. So it's not as if this is pennies we're talking about, is what I'm trying to get at. This is not the simple case of, oh, it's only $5,000 a week for a player who play 20 games and score one goal. That's significant money in this situation that we're in. And the EFL won't let us spend that money lightly, and we shouldn't be spending that money lightly because it's, you know, it's not infinite. So let's go into news bites then. There's a couple of, well, there's not, as I say, not much transfer stuff to talk about, but we'll talk about any specific stories going on in news bites, and then we'll go on to big match preview, talk about the Swansea game in the cup.
Be loud and be proud and back the boys and make some noise. Come on, you Oz!
Shout out to this week's podcast sponsor, ZCZ Films, showing that age is no barrier to being a hooly hoop.
Only player who looks like leaving Reading in the next week as we sit here now is Mark McNulty. He wasn't involved in the squad, despite, you know, there's no real reason other than Paunovic basically saying that it was technical. He doesn't want him to be part of the squad. He just doesn't think he's good enough, really. But anyway, he's been linked with Tranmere, but also reports today saying that Dundee United are on the verge of taking him up on basically a free transfer. He spent time on loan there recently, Mark McNulty. So it looks like his, with 1 year left on his contract, looks like he'll be allowed to leave. Also, Reading have extended their deal with Kasumo Sim, which is lovely. Training shirt sleeves they'll be appearing on and advertising boards around the Wadeski. So we're keeping on with Kasumo, obviously with Select Car Leasing being our main sponsors this season. So in terms of transfer news, do you, as a kind of crystal ball thing, do you think we'll be seeing much transfer news this week? My opinion is that I think deadline day might be a bit of a big one in terms of snaffling up the last couple of loans. But really, I think the next fortnight could be pretty dead.
Yeah, it's hard to judge at this minute because it feels very much like the kind of window where if one thing happens, everything's going to click into place and suddenly we're going to be all systems go. It could very well be that we see a story land a couple of hours after we release this podcast. Reading are now allowed to sign players, and then we then snap up 6 players that we've had on our radar for a long time. It's hard to judge. I do feel like we are going to get signings in at some point. going back to the kind of the start of the transfer window, I thought hopefully Reading will get kind of 7 to 9 players in, really boost the squad, really get these players in early, and give them a chance to get settled in and to get up to speed with things. That ship has obviously long since sailed, and us, like other teams actually for that matter, I think Blackburn have not made any signings yet either. It's been a very dead window, and there is going to be more business that has to not only be done over the next couple of weeks for a whole number of clubs, but business to then kind of get incorporated into the side. And I wonder if Reading, like other clubs maybe, are going to get a few late signings in and really see the benefit of that later on in the season as those players hopefully not only come in, but then kind of get up to speed.
Yeah, I still think that the last couple of days we'll see 2 or 3 loan signings, maybe a free agent or something like that. It's perfectly plausible that maybe we'll get a breakthrough in the meantime, but I'm just personally being cautiously optimistic that things will happen later down the line. There's still almost a month of business to go. Got quite a few games this week. The Premier League hasn't even kicked off yet. We'll see what sort of squads are going on with them as they finalise their 25-man squads, who's missing out and all that sort of stuff. Lots and lots of time, lots of stuff to go. These transfers can move very quickly. Just look at Aston Villa and Danny Ings. We were talking about owners talking to their fans. We saw Christian Perslow pop up with a lot of stuff for the Villa fans after Jack Grealish was sold and their process after that. And things can move quickly with it, as that deal can kind of show. So, in terms of finally bits for news bites, I said last week, but the women's, the under-23s and the under-18s aren't in official action yet. Under-18s are first off on the 14th of August, which is obviously Saturday. And then on Monday, the under-23s are up in Newcastle as they kick off their division Premier League 2 season. The women's aren't in action till September. Hopefully we'll be bringing you some more stuff on that as we look towards their season. But for now, let's go into a big match preview and talk about the Carabao Cup.
You're listening to the Tilehurst End podcast by Reading fans for Reading fans.
So, Zim, if clubs are in crisis and everyone's kicking off, then it's just as well that Reading, if we're one of them, then we're playing two more of them this week, because Swansea in the Carabao Cup on Tuesday, that is as I just quickly load up my Google, that is an 8 o'clock kickoff at the SCLS, as I suppose you could call it. First round of Carabao Cup. They lost to Blackburn on the weekend. 72% possession they had away at Blackburn and managed to come away with a 2-1 defeat. So they're not in the best of spirits. They've got a new manager, lost quite a few players compared to their good last season, which sounds a bit familiar. With this one, Paunovic has said that he's going to bet a competitive team. There is, again, as I mentioned, that established player rule, the sense that if you bring on loads of debutants, you kind of fill up the squad with players that might mean that EFL don't let you sign more players under your embargo, because it will look as if we have a lot of professionals if we go and give the under-23s, you know, 7-8 debutants. So what do you think will change? Do you think we'll change a lot, or is this actually going to be used as a bit of a pre-season game to keep getting the first 11 up to speed?
Just on that thing about established players, it does seem a bit daft, more looking at the EFL rules, that we are having to talk about players who are maybe like 18 or 19, whether or not they're established players. The whole thing has just been silly for Reading to not have.
And Derby as well. Derby's squad, because they had the COVID outbreak and a load of their players played in the FA Cup for one game last season. That meant they all became established players, and therefore Derby had to get even more special permission to sign people because they had all these established 18-year-olds.
Yeah, exactly. They shouldn't have had to go out and get any kind of permission to get that cleared up, basically. It was extremely obvious that these were not established players. And the situation in that case was obviously very unique because of the COVID event that they went through. And either way, look, clubs should be encouraged to bring through young players. This shouldn't count towards your squad total at all under any circumstances. Clubs should be encouraged to bring players through, to give them appearances. The idea that we have to kind of be looking over our shoulder because we brought Femi Azeez on as a sub against Sheffield Wednesday last season, or brought Mabedi Kamara on against Luton in the Cup, it's all just ridiculous, to be honest. But anyway, going on to the Swansea game, I think ironically we will see a couple of these players. I'd like to see Kamara get some kind of appearance. I don't know if that may be this established player rule because he didn't. Why he didn't come?
But he's played. He's played in the FA Cup, hasn't he? So I think he is technically because you're not an established player if you've played in the Johnston's Paint Trophy or lower, basically.
Yeah. But either way, I hope we see him against Swansea because he does seem like a talented player. And you look at the number of under 23 players who haven't been used so much by Paolo, or rather they kind of dropped away a little bit after some involvement earlier on in pre-season. The fact that he stayed in there and he got on the bench usually wouldn't seem like a big thing when we don't have too many players in the squad. But I do get the feeling that Kamara is kind of looked at by Paolo as potentially being a player he wants to involve this season. So yeah, hopefully see him. I think we're going to probably see Tom Holmes come in, hopefully in the back four this time rather than up front, although you never know. I'd like to see Bristow as well at left back, actually give him some experience there rather than shunting him out of position and putting him on the left wing, which is understandable, I guess, in the circumstances, but give him that experience at left back, and this is a good opportunity to do that. Similarly, bring Puskas in up top. Didn't have so much time in the team in pre-season, and hopefully kind of give him a chance to get up to speed a little bit more by starting him up top against Swansea.
Yeah, well, I think the five subs, basically, I think you can almost guarantee that they'll come in. Certainly, you'd expect to see Southwood in, Puskas again. Other than that, I wouldn't expect loads. It looks like the under-23s will at least be able to be on the bench because, as Poundlich did say, they did play a friendly on Friday, so he wanted to give them some minutes there. Don't think that's the case in midweek. And then the Preston game, they got spanked 4-1 at home to Hull, as I said earlier in the show, at home on the opening weekend, having gone ahead 3 minutes in. If Reading had done that, I'd absolutely fret to think what would have been said about the club. But again, that's just one that both of these teams, these are two pretty winnable games. And I think we found out a good amount about Reading in the Stoke game, but we will find out a lot more about them in the next two games. It sounds obvious to say, but because we know that Swansea and Preston are vulnerable, or at least have vulnerabilities, we don't really know what Stoke's level is. They might be the best team in the league this year, but Swansea and Preston, we've seen them now. We know there's problems there. Then neither team really was being picked as a promotion candidate at the start of the season. If Reading go out and, you know, can put in two really good performances, get a win and a draw, or a couple of wins, it will say a lot more about this team than I think the Stoke game does.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, it comes back to the reaction. Look, if Reading go out against Swansea and don't play particularly well, and they look kind of cowed and they look very much under the cosh after losing at the weekend, then I will be a little bit more worried. But if we can go out there and put in a positive performance, not necessarily going to win, of course. It'd be still a difficult job to do that, given the small squad we have. If we can go out and put in a positive performance, I'll be happy. And Preston is a really good opportunity to go and get something. This is a team that we have generally done well against in recent years. I know we didn't win either of our games against them last season, but look, before that, we were pretty good at beating Preston. So hopefully we can get back to that. And actually looking at our town end preview for this season, we got fans from around the division. The Preston fan said that we are basically their bogey team. The amount of times we've beaten them, and look, get back to that record, and got a good chance.
Yeah, I think we usually beat them 1-0 with a new manager. So if that happens on Saturday, something's gone very wrong against Swansea, basically. So, yeah, in terms of prediction, then we'll do the Preston game before that. But Swansea game, then what are you going to say? I think I'm going to go for a 1-0 Reading win for the Swansea game.
You know, I usually go for quite low scores, usually kind of around 2-1 or something. But I'm thinking new season, I'm going to be a bit more bold, and I'm going to say an exciting 4-2 win for Reading, just for the sake of it.
That would, for the thousands that are going to be turning up for this game, that is going to be a very entertaining August evening out, and hopefully it'll be a good attendance then before the Preston game, which again, hopefully we'll see a lot of fans there. I'm very much looking forward to it. For the prediction league, just to round off, myself, Ollie, Westy and Handbags took the defeat. The fact that a lot of us actually said we'll lose probably is a sign that it wasn't such a shock to go down to Stoke, but That's the thing, isn't it? We've just got to take each game as it comes. And this, you know, losing to Stoke Sim, it's not the most surprising thing in the world. Hopefully in a week's time, we're sat here talking about something a little more positive.
Yeah, absolutely.
And yeah, thank you them, Sim, for popping on. And thank you everyone for listening this week. We'll be back, I think about Sunday night, it'll be next week's show as we review the first two home games of Reading's season. Hopefully we'll have some more memories created as fans finally retake their seats en masse for a league game at the Medeski Stadium. And hopefully we'll be thinking about how maybe this might be quite a good little season. Until then, come on you arse.
You smile, funny how the crumbs always